Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Chatting Between Takes. I'm Sean Benson, your host. If it sounds like I'm kind of yelling, I can't really hear my own voice. I'm in the car doing another car cast. I am on the 401 West on my way to visit my best friend since I was four. We're going to play a little bit of golf today before I have to head back into crap traffic and go do some voice recording for Girlfriend Experience, the show I did. So excited, you know, the idea that I have a friend who I've known for 36 years, and we've never lost touch, and I get excited about these days because, you know, one thing I'm learning is these friendships take commitment, especially with, you know, I always go on about social media and I get all like, back in the day, but yeah, like I've got 1,600 Facebook friends, and I don't see a lot of them unless I bump into them. So they're not really friends. They're friends in the modern term, and I like them, I guess. I don't approve people I don't have some tangential relationship to. But you know what I'm saying? And by the way, I hate that Facebook, filters feeds. I don't really know how it works. And Facebook owes me nothing. But I'd like to see everybody's feed unless I choose to unfollow them. Because I notice that if I see someone from like summer camp and I write them a message, all of a sudden I get their feed all the time. And I'm like, where's that been for the last couple of years? Whatever. I'm sure there's some setting. Or I'm sure it's a monetizing thing. And again, I'm one of these few people. This is where I am a fiscal conservative. Facebook owes me nothing. Facebook just exists. Just because Facebook once gave me X for free doesn't mean I'm entitled indefinitely to that for free. It's called your dealer giving you the first hit for free. It's a good business model. It makes you like the product. And then when they go, by the way, you know, your next bag's $40, you go, yeah, of course I'll pay $40 for that because it's awesome. So, you know, if you think you're getting something for free, you're probably being set up to pay for it later. My friends and I were online talking about Apple Music. I love the Apple Music service. I do find it's presenting me great playlists. What I hate is the interface changing, the visual. If I'm listening to John Mayer, Badge and Gun, the going back to the song, it's just so clunky to me. It's not visually clunky, it's visually pretty. But the basics, I like the sort of big picture to be Mac with the drag and drop, but the basics I like to be PC with sort of listing so that I can just access directories left, right, in a very simple fashion. And in that, I mean, I'm not a Luddite, but in that manner, that first iPod just kind of had it. You just click and then it opens from there and then you back up the same way. But we're getting this for free for 3 months, but I'm going to keep paying for it because I like it. Especially because normally what people and what I would do at like a party, if you want to play a tune, is go to YouTube. YouTube, first off, has the worst compression. It's brutal. And when you navigate away from YouTube on your iPhone, it just goes down to nothing. So you can't be safarying while having a YouTube song play. So again, Apple Music's pretty great that way because I want to be able to go, oh, that song and play it. And YouTube was kind of my only recourse for a while. But again, it's free for 3 months. Now, if they just kind of offered it, and then in 2 years we're like, and now we're charging for Apple Music, everybody'd be like, fuck Apple Music. But they kind of manage expectations properly, which is, I think, pretty key. I want to jump into some questions right away because I've had a few come up on Facebook when I mentioned I was doing this podcast. Always late, always going to happen, though. And a big thanks to Zoe de Gros Maison. Fantastic podcast, and because she's a popular actress, tons of new people are listening to this podcast, I bet. So to anybody who's new, who's just kind of catching up because of Zoe, big shout out, and welcome to Chatting Between Takes. So the first question comes from Jackie Smith the Goose. Fast women, fast cars, or fast politics? Take your pick. For me, the answer is pretty obvious. There's a great Sean Kelly story. Sean Kelly was one of the, best cyclists in the world. And he's, I believe, Ireland's most winning cyclist ever. He's actually one of the, the usual commentators on the Tour de France or the Paris-Roubaix or whatever. Sean Kelly's a badass. And once his girlfriend said to him, "You like your car and then your bike and then you like me." And he said, "You got it wrong, darling. The bike's first." Fast cars. Fast cars for sure. Now, remember, that doesn't mean fast cars instead of, let's say, Emily. I would sell the Porsche before I would break up with Emily. Oh my God, he's so sweet. Oh my God. Because I actually don't like fast women. Excuse me, I got a little bug in my throat. Fast women are annoying. Whether it's that they're fast because they're whorish, which, by the way, I'm not whore shaming. I love whorish. Believe me, I love whorish. But I would not want to think that whorish works for me for more than a moment. Also, fast often means fast talker. And the women I've met who talk too fast generally are forsaking content for ramble. So in my experience, the faster women are. And yeah, so, you know, fast women are great. Fast whores are great. No slut shaming on Chatting Between Takes here, people. If you're new to the show, somebody put something online that said, heels aren't sexy if wearing them makes you walk like a newborn calf. To which I had to respond, first off, the term is slippery Bambi, and yes, it's sexy as hell. So yeah, and then in terms of the politics, Jackie, you know I get fired up. I love this stuff. I wanted to go one step further with the political stuff, because why do I care so much, you kind of asked last time, like, what's the deal? And I think my answer was pretty spot on, but I only hinted at the end because I was thinking through it. It really is childhood wound. I mean, politics is childhood wound enacted as adults. I really believe that. It's our relationship with power over which we have no control, but do have kind of a say in. So we're basically children. And then we get these edicts that come down. And so for me, so much of my childhood wound was lack of fairness. You know, I witnessed behaviors between my parents where there was just like something totally unfair. And Emily and I always talk about this, you know, like we both have that kind of peacekeeper role. So if our friends are fighting or if my parents were fighting, like I want to be the peacekeeper because, you know, I believe I'm the one seeing things sort of logically. And I truly think I have what I would call sort of the gift of Cassandra, where, you know, classically in Greek mythology, I think it's Cassandra, I think I've got this one right, she sees but can't express what's actually going on. No one believes her. And I feel like that's what my childhood, so much of that was like, was, you know, I'd witness, let's say, two drunk parents saying XYZ, 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 and then going back with an argument that was totally contradictory to what they'd done or said, and I'm there 8 years old in my pajamas going, but that's not quite what you said. But for me, peace was more important than being right, so then I would be like, oh, but she's kind of right too. So there was this real, and it's interesting, Emily and I are talking about right-wing versus Democratic. Like a Democrat will look at their own party and go, right, it's pretty good, but, and Democrat, I mean liberal NDP as well, and we'll go, yeah, it's pretty good, but man, if only he hadn't said that one thing on that one bill back in 1999, I'm not sure he's my candidate. Whereas Republicans will go, what's that? That guy's right and that guy's wrong? Great. That guy's always right and that guy's always wrong. And we've talked about this. It equals unity. So when you're seeking logic and reason, you don't always get the unity. But at the same time, you know, it's sort of that childhood firing up of, please, I just want fairness. And how can you not all see what the truth is here? So that's why my big rant, Jackie, is always about, I mean, you know my current one, and it changes. My current one is that fiscal conservatives don't exist in government. And if they did, I might vote for them. Okay, I'm not afraid of the word conservative. I'm afraid of being fooled, blah, blah, blah. And the last thing I want to say politically, I was really thinking about this idea. The other day, you know, here's my traffic and politics combined. Pedestrians can be fucking assholes when they decide that just because they're walking, they're right. So when you're going to turn right, and if you don't drive a car or even a motorbike in Toronto, motorbikes are a bit easier with pedestrians, but you watch this happen all the time because technically, pedestrians, look, flashing red hand means don't begin to cross. The point is there's a bunch of cars, i.e. flow of traffic, that is aided when you cross immediately, and if you get there too late, you don't get to begin to cross. Now, of course I do, of course you do. It's how we do it. My issue is with the entitlement. And there's two kinds of people who will not give a little jog when they know you're waiting to turn right and they know they've started to cross after the hand said don't begin to cross. It's either, and this is interesting to me, the like homeless, like poor guy, the guy who's down on his luck and is like, fuck you, I'm walking, I don't even own a car. Or the rich, well-dressed, entitled guy who just fucking saunters along and is like, I move at my pace, the world around me can fuck itself. And then there's that middle ground of sort of reasonable people who sort of give it a little jog. Like, yeah, we're both trying to get somewhere and I did start late, but I am going to go because that's what pedestrians do. And you give them a nod because, yeah, you would do it too, but you also appreciate that they get that you're there. I would call that the interesting bridge between your billionaires, not all, but your multimillionaires who are like, I'm going to fucking drill for oil. I don't give a shit about the environment. I don't give a shit about your gay kid. Oh, wait, my kid's gay. Now I might care about it. We're talking about the empathy gap. You've got those people, and you've got the fucking, like, middle American dirt poor people. I don't know what our equivalent would be. What would it be, like Calgary Roughnecks? I'm not sure. Who are also like, fuck you, entitled Toronto elite. And it's weird because they're both looking at me differently, not me personally, but me as a you know, downtown Toronto elite, that liberal elite. So the irony is that the people sort of looking down on me are behaving the same way as the people, not necessarily looking up down, like looking up going, oh, you've got it all. Fuck you, liberal. You know, how dare you? And so it's interesting because there's that sandwich where, you know, you've got the bread being super entitlement. That's really what I'm getting at, is that whether you're so fucking dumb, sorry, that you're like, yeah, Hillary Clinton got fired in 1974 by Watergate. Well, that doesn't mean you're dumb if you're saying that. What it does mean if you're promoting it, though, is that you haven't looked up the fact that she never got fired. She never lied about it. The only person who lied about it is the guy who said he fired her because he never did. But if you have a point to make and you don't care about facts, you'll make the point using a non-fact. And then it'll look like person Y is the liar. And to people who don't care, they'll go, yeah, I can't believe that bitch did that. She didn't. Well, I wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton, by the way. She's not my vote. But she's not guilty of anything people are saying she's guilty of. But God bless the sandwich. The billionaires, and I'm not saying the dirt poor. I'm saying the don't give a shit about facts. I don't care that I started to walk late. Fuck you. And that's where it does blend, not just rich poor. Anyone who feels entitled. And it's interesting because the entitlement comes through a victim mentality. And I get that. I'm fighting that daily. You know, I got it from my mom who thinks she's a victim. And I will think I'm a victim. Which beautifully leads me to my next question. Damon Runyon. I'm driving, so I can't look up the exact question. But I looked it up right before I started driving. How do you deal with major disappointment one day when the next day you have to be on? Let me get this cough out once and for all. Damon, the answer for me is a bit of what I'm talking about with the not quite entitlement, but the idea that I'm a victim, okay? So I've talked about this before, that I confuse not getting what I want with the world wronging me. Okay, I'm going to say that again. This is one of my most fundamental, like, life points that I'm currently working on. I confuse not getting what I want with the world wronging me. So I want to get a part, I don't get a part, and I start to go into victim mode. If I never screwed my career on booze and drugs, and if only I blah, 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 and if only my hairline wasn't, you know, the world's against me. And it's funny because the reason I think I deserve the part is because I think I'm the most talented, sort of most interesting, powerful person there is. And then the irony is when I don't get the part, it's because I'm so fucking helpless in this world that makes a victim out of me. And I laugh in moments like now when I feel pretty good. And I'm like, which is it, brother? Are you God or are you a victim of the smallest wind? And that's my narcissism. That's my narcissism and my ego telling me that any of it is actually important. Now, what the fuck? What do you mean it's not important? It's my livelihood. Yes, but I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing on this big old earth. If it's up to me, I'd still be doing like heroin, coke, strippers, and sports cars. Like, that's it. Luckily, only one of those, the healthy one, has stuck around, the sports cars. Everything else is gone because it didn't work. But left to my own devices, that's what I think the right life is. What happens is I lose, okay? This is a fundamental idea too. I surrender or lose or whatever. So the world starts saying, that one wasn't for you. And Eckhart Tolle talks about that. He talks about it really simply. The reason why I know that I was destined to do this podcast is because I'm doing it. That's the all the proof needed for destiny. Damon, you and I were destined to meet because we met. So by that same token, you weren't meant to get that part. Now, I actually don't think everything happens for a reason. I think things happen and we can apply reason. Somebody else, I'm assuming it's a part, by the way. You said disappointment. I shouldn't assume. Let me put it in my terms. For me, I don't get a part and I go, well, blah, blah, blah. And I start to try and find reason. The reason isn't, if everything happens for a reason, then I need to hunt around for the reason I didn't get the part. And by the way, this fucking happens in breakups or relationships where people start going, right, but I just need to know why. No, you don't. If you're always seeking the why in your relationship with your partner, first off, you're probably really annoying. And secondly, you're thinking with a child's brain. The child needs to know why. The adult understands that there's no why for a fucking head-on car accident. I mean, did somebody make a mistake? Yes. But that's still, is that going to make it okay? No. There's no why that makes death from cancer at too young an age make sense all of a sudden. So obsession with whys is, again, I think a child. Why? The sky's blue. Why? Because why? You know, that's a kid's thing. So when a partner's like, I'm just not sure we should do the same. Why? Look, I want to break up. Why? Because I want to break up, period. It's like no's a complete sentence. So when I get a no from casting, it's a complete sentence. They had a sandwich that day and the rumbling in their belly made them go with person A, not person B. Or person A is way more talented. Or person A has a better look, or nobody knows. Now that also goes, Damon, to the idea that I don't know what I'm on this earth for, but as I lose enough, little by little, part of me asks other people for help, and those people go, well, you should help other people. You should offer yourself in service to your fellow man. And I go, yeah. Well, I think the best way I can do that is by being a movie star and having a villa and at least 5 Porsches, and then I'll help. And they're like, no, no, no. And it has to do with this idea I've seen posted many times, which is the ego tells me once everything falls into place, I'll be okay. Whereas my spirit, my true authentic self, knows that I'm okay and that therefore everything will fall into place. And Marianne Williamson talks about that. The only mistake humans actually make is forgetting that we're okay, because we're okay. I talked about that. I have a whole podcast, thanks to David Sutcliffe, dedicated to you're okay, it's okay, everything's fine. So knowing that there's no reason behind, and I'm sorry that I always use this example, but there's no reason why awesome Jewish guy sitting at table in fucking Germany in 1940 got yanked out of his house and shot in the back of the head. There's no reason for that. Now if I bring that, and that's a real tragedy. That's a proper tragedy. So therefore, there's no reason sometimes. And again, I'm thinking acting Damon again. You might not have meant it. I'm assuming you do. You and I have careers. We're doing just fine. So it's one thing if you've never booked a piece of acting work by age 40 and you're like, I'm an actor. And it's like, no, you're not. And I'm not saying that to be a dick, but like the world has given you zero evidence. Generally, acting doesn't work the way, like, I think the guy who founded Wendy's only did it in like his late 50s. And then so he ends up like a multimillionaire, a billionaire, whatever. And it's you can point to it, but you know, there's not a ton of people, and even a guy like Chris Cooper, who shows up a bit later in life, he had been acting, you know, the way you and I have, Damon. So, you know, we're on the right path. In terms of shaking it off for the next day, again, I hate to be pithy with my stuff, but it is one day at a time. Like, my experience is that I can wake up feeling wretched on a Wednesday, but I make sure I just do my shit. You know, I make sure I don't screw anything up. For me, I don't go get drunk. I don't cheat on Emily. And if I go to bed and I... See, I'm pretty lucky, everybody listening. I have a day that I gave up drinking and drugs. And those were the thing that were keeping me from being the guy I could be. Okay? Now, my problem wasn't drinking and drugs. My problem was my behavior and my personality and my entitlement and my anger and my rage. But I was never going to get at those if I didn't get rid of booze and drugs. So my belief is that most of us have something we're doing that's preventing us from, but what do you need to get rid of to become the person you know you can be? And the more you don't get rid of that thing, the more frustration you feel at not being the person you know you could be. Because with each passing day, we know that we're giving up on ourselves. But if you're listening to this podcast, especially, none of you out there giving up on yourselves. Like, this I know, right? You've tuned out by now if you're the kind of person who gives up on themselves. I really believe that. And so, how do we then manifest not giving up on ourselves? For me, it really has to do with, and the point of me saying that I got to give up those things, I'll never have a good life if I drink or do drugs. So, I have a beautiful baseline. So, if I'm having a shitty, shitty, shitty day, I get to just go, right, but are you worse off than back in 2007 when life was so bad you realized you had to give up booze and drugs? And my answer is, no, I'm better off. And in that moment, I get to go, phew. So you don't need to erect a monument bigger than the Great Pyramids or start a movement greater than Christianity today. You just kind of need to get to bed without causing any shit. If I do that, that Thursday I wake up after, usually it's a lot better. And it doesn't mean the Wednesday didn't hurt. This is a, you know me, this is something I'm big on, is feeling your pain, not grinning through it and pretending it doesn't exist. That doesn't mean curling up and going fetal. If I feel rough on a Wednesday, I still might have to go to work and deliver. That's called being an adult. But I might, at lunchtime, not sit and pretend I'm having a great time with everyone at the commissary or the lunch table. I'll go to my trailer, maybe weep it out a bit, or maybe just be angry a bit, but or maybe call someone who can help me through it. The point of all this, Damon, is that, and you know, you did ask, so I'm giving a pretty detailed answer, is I make sure it's just that day. It's not the story of my life, because I'm used to having big sweeping stories of my life, and all they do is keep me in subjugation. You know, there's, I'll call it actor X, has booked 3 parts I've auditioned for in the last 2 years, we'll call it. Good ones. And then I'm at the bank the other day, and I'm putting a shit ton of money in the bank, and I look up, and actor X is on TV. And I want to start going, oh man, if you hadn't screwed up your career on booze and drugs, and if you hadn't whatever, that would have been you, because you almost booked that, blah, blah, blah. And then I stopped, and it was beautiful because I finally heard something that I hadn't heard before, which is, imagine if my dad phoned me every day and went, so I saw so-and-so on TV, why aren't you on that show? Every day. Or if every day he called and went, man, if only you hadn't wrecked your career on booze and drugs, you'd be so much further along. We'd all go, your dad's an asshole. And I would not answer that phone call from him. And I realized that I was sneakily starting to insult myself on a daily basis again by comparing myself to other people or by using my past as an excuse for why I'm not having a good present, which can sometimes be years worth or sometimes day to day. So yeah, something didn't work out. It sucks. Feel it. Cry. Rage. But also reach out, move through it, help somebody else, and your Thursday will probably be better than your Wednesday. I'll be curious to know how your Thursday went. I wonder if it was the same Thursday I had. I saw your name on a sheet. Hey-o. Jeffrey Heward. Jeffrey, I love you. I miss you. Jeffrey asked why him and his husband, who pay taxes in Canada and to have a residence in Canada, can't vote in Canada. Basically, what just happened was they overturned a decision that would have let people who are indefinitely outside of Canada vote because they're Canadian citizens. And if you've been away for more than 5 years with no intention of returning to Canada, you can't vote, period. And so that's, you know, ruffled some feathers. I'd say this, Jeffrey, and I might not have the right information. First off, big picture, 100% you guys should be allowed to vote. I know you have property here. I know you pay taxes here. That's enough. Like, period. That's enough. Now, the stipulation for me, and I'm not sure how you have to prove this, is that you have to tell them you have intention. So, if you're not away for more than 5 years, you can vote. So, first off, yay. But secondly, if you're away for more than 5 years, the idea is that you're voting, you're essentially violating the social contract. This is not my idea, this is the judge's idea. That the social contract involves a fabric of day-to-day interaction, of day-to-day investment, and not necessarily financial. And therefore, if you're away for over 5 years and not living in Canada ever, that you don't really know what you're voting for. You're not part of the thing you're voting for. I'm not sure I disagree with that, to be honest. Except here's the thing, Jeffrey, and here's the... I might be wrong about this, but again, I read as much as I could because I wanted to answer this, you know, fact and opinion combined. If you have intention to return to Canada and you vouch for that, you still can vote if you've been away for more than 5 years. So that all seems pretty reasonable to me. Just saying, I don't think that's crazy, because what it means is that, oh, if you are coming back though, then yeah, it might be longer than 5 years, but we're fine with you. So I don't know. I think it's, you know, I understand the frustration maybe. I personally think, yeah, if you're not really there, you know, it's like if I'm part of a group that has business meetings and I never attend the group, except once a year I show up at a business meeting and I have all these big sweeping designs for the club, which as we know is different than a vote. An argument could be made that, yeah, I don't know. Why are we valuing that guy's vote equally to somebody who's here? I'm just throwing out devil's advocate stuff. Come home. Come home. That's really the answer. You belong here. I don't know where you belong. I miss you. That's what I mean. Anyways, I got to take a little pause here, people. I'm going to hit you guys up on the way home. My goal with this round of golf is bogey golf. That's only ever my goal, is to hit one over a hole, which means on a par 71, an 89 would make me ecstatic. So wish me luck. We're looking for an 89 here. Last time I played with Greg, I hit an 89, but I'm dealing with some left leg Achilles crap right now. I'm always dealing with something. Man, 40's the best, but I am not going gently into this next phase. It's a struggle. Okay, I'll talk to you guys in a bit. Love you. See you in what will feel like no time. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Again, you will not have really perceived a break. I have been gone for about 5 hours. Let us never speak of that golf game again. Phew, that stunk. Golf, bad golf is like bad sex. There's no such thing. I'm out on the course with Greg. Yeah, that's not bad. You know, okay, so we come out and Greg's car, which he had parked well away from every other car when I pulled in. I always do this in parking lots. And we come out and it's hemmed in on both sides by two cars. But on either side of those two cars, there's seven spots. And this is something I always notice. And I don't mean me as in me, Sean. I mean me as in me, human. Why do people always want to be near me? Emily and I noticed this last time we were in LA at the beach. We go to the beach, and basically we're doing that simple math. And I'll make it simply two-dimensional, which is there's people 100 meters to the left, 100 meters to the right. So this is the right spot. Now, if there's somebody 10 meters to the left and 100 meters to the right, well, guess what? We want to move, what would it be, like 45 meters to the right so that we're sort of at that 55 meter point between the two. But we don't experience this. We'll put our stuff down. We'll go in the water. And again, lest you think it's, well, yeah, you've got a hot girlfriend. People are just trying to get near her. They don't necessarily see us. They come down while we're in the ocean, see towels and go, oh, I guess. So we'll come out of the water and on a dead empty beach, 5 feet from us will be a family of seven. And I'm thinking, I understand that you want to feel safe, that there's a human animal instinct to, you don't necessarily want to be the lonest of rangers. But there's a lifeguard tower. There are people around. Don't you kind of want to be alone as much as possible? I would want to, and especially if you have kids. Don't you kind of want those kids to just, not be that near the, creepy adults? Especially because I'm probably wearing a Speedo. Speedo. I'm just saying that I do not understand why people always want to get close. Same thing happens in parking lots. I'll go to Canadian Tire, and I've got this vintage car, so I will park it about 100 spots away from any other car. And I'll go in, and I'm not making this up. Often, this will happen where I'll come out, and there's sort of 5 cars clustered around me, and then, 90 spots until the next one. So I'm like, why? Why do you want to be closer to being dinged yourself? I mean, for me, it's just door dings. I've come out, as I've raged about on the podcast, from groceries and had a lovely vintage car door destroyed with no note or anything, just a bunch of red paint on the white car. And, that's a lot of money for me to have to fix. So I don't want that. So I park as far away from people as I can. And in terms of, me and Emily telling dumb jokes or making out on the beach, I don't really want to be that close to the family. Especially, by the way, because I'm probably in a Speedo. And if me and Em start making out, I'm just saying, I don't want a 7-year-old boy looking over at me while I'm wearing a Speedo, having a good time on the beach. If you know what I mean, that I know of, because some bells can't be unrung. Now, I'm not saying that might not be a good thing for the 7-year-old boy. I'm saying it's me who's going to be traumatized by that. That kid's going to have the fucking visual of his life. of his young life thus far. You know, I was thinking about this with the golf. I have a really nice swing. It could be corrected a bit, but I can play birdie or par holes, but I don't golf enough to be actually good. But it's one of those things where when I golf with golfers, they're like, oh, I'm actually pretty good. Until the end of the round when my score reflects, no, I'm not. And it's a fun one I was thinking about with Greg. So let's say I play once a month or once every 6 weeks, which I kind of do. $60, we'll call it. We find the cheaper courses, and because of all my hip crap, I get a cart. So not bad for 5 hours of entertainment. And I was saying to Greg, you know, I got to hit the driving range before we play next month, because instead of spending $60 and doing okay, I'd rather spend, let's say, 70, one or two buckets of balls down at the docks, and have a better time. Because that one time at the range will work out just enough kinks. And I'm like, we were watching this woman ahead of us play, and she never hit a good shot. Like 18 holes of sculling the ball every time. And we were in no rush. She wasn't holding us up. It was just, I remember thinking, is that fun? Like, I just double bogeyed and I'm pissed. You know, my shoulders got a little tight, and I started to spray the ball a bit. I didn't even lose the ball. I just kind of was like, ugh, I'm in the rough over here again. 260 yards down the fairway. Maybe on a bad drive, 220. So it's still annoying. How's she having fun? Like, I guess it takes all sorts. But when there's an objective being so miserably failed at, I personally, and maybe this is why I need like therapy and support groups, I don't have a lot of fun doing that. I kind of like being good at the things I do. Hey, big surprise, if you haven't been listening to the podcast, it's kind of all I go on about. Man, I gotta say, and I know I've talked about this, I want to keep this brief, because, and partly because I feel vulnerable talking about it. My body is changing. I'm 40, and I've talked about my hip getting kind of sore. It's basically a mini bursitis hip impingement. So it's not like a major pain. Eventually it could be operable. You can remove the bursa of the hip, these little sacs, apparently without ill effect, arthroscopically. We're not there yet though. Also, like my Achilles flared up the other day, kind of for no reason. And then Greg and I are golfing and my left shoulder just kinks up, like to the point where turning my head left kind of hurts. Luckily, Greg and I go way back, so he's willing to do a little massage work on the golf course on me, and it was really helpful. If you are, I think girls are better at this. If you're a guy and you don't have a guy friend who can give you a shoulder massage when you need it, look at your sexuality. You might be afraid of something, or you might have just been convinced that, you know, guys helping guys is gay. Because, man, Greg just was like, can I do some work on that? I was like, please. Never a thought. And afterwards, I was like, God, I'm so glad that that's not an issue in my life. I mean, I might make dumb jokes or have made dumb jokes, which I'm trying to less and less. But I just love having a friend who can help, you know? And it's not like, no, I'm fine. No, I'm fine. While I basically, you know, shank every drive there on in because I'm too tight to bring the club back nicely. But it's frustrating because I'm better at everything in life, but my body seems to want me to do everything in life a lot less. And by the way, that includes sex. You know, I have a longer refractory phase than I ever did before. So it's like, my drive might be the same, and it's like, yeah, but you gotta wait a little longer before you can go again. Or, you know, when I was a kid, I could just like, I don't even mean kid, like 28-year-old, jump over a fence and then go play some baseball and then go do karate and then go lift weights. And it was just kind of what was up. And I wasn't excellent at any one of those things. And now that I'm really learning how to like lift weights in a way that, you know, my muscles are growing better, my karate's way, way better, blah, blah, blah. My body's like, yeah, but no. It's frustrating. I know the idea youth is wasted on the young and all that different stuff. And I have talked about how I don't mind slowing down a bit. I just feel like I'm being forced to slow down. Well, got a phone call. So these car casts are fun, man. It's like it's happening in real time. Shout out to Sensei Dofan. Nice chat with him. I love him, man. And, it was nice because actually something that came up was just about that body stuff. And we talked a little bit about genetics versus, because I do pretty ballistic type stuff and my brother doesn't. But he has his own issues. And I'm finding that a lot of it is structural. That the way I stand, and by the way, I tend to have slouched for a whole life. Also, my first sort of really serious, consistent activity was ballet for 9 years. And so that hip turnout, if I lie down, my legs fall open to 180 degrees. So when I was younger and everyone's like, oh my God, you have the best turnout, I always thought that was the best thing possible. But I do think it's brought the hips forward a bit in the socket. Anyways, the specifics are a bit like whatever. This is part of the journey, I guess. With my martial arts, I had to take it down a notch because of my hip last year. But I didn't take my training intent, frequency down a notch. So I was training, I was teaching, and it was like, how can I keep in the game but not do what I've always thought karate is? And when I kind of, I was fighting the other night and my hip was feeling amazing with zero fallout since, so we're in good shape with that. My martial arts is deeper for having had to, and I'll relate this to me and Emily. I fucking hate that she has to see me, actually some morning shuffle to the bathroom until I warm up, which is about 8 steps worth before I can actually move through when I have this sore Achilles and this sore hip and all this shit. Because it's vulnerable. She's younger than me already. I already sometimes fear that she'd like the 28-year-old me better. It's not true, by the way. Especially not the actual 28-year-old me. Maybe there's a fear that she'd like some 28-year-old better. That's a legitimate fear. Why not? Why wouldn't she? Well, for a million reasons. But my point is that, yeah, it's vulnerable to be like, I'm sore. Now granted, she's like, you've worked out 5 days this week and it's only Friday and you're going again. And I'm like, you're right. There's a real thing here and there's a real amount of recovery needed. And I'm trying to modify my eating to blah, blah, blah. The point is that these things are humbling, man. Being part of the deal is humbling. Even talking to my sensei, man, I just want to tell him, oh yeah, I fucking ripped off 1,000 kicks last night and 10,000 leg raises. It's not the story I get to tell right now. Now what happens is we get to have a more honest and open interaction about it all. It's just not the story I want to tell. Now the one thing I'm proud of isn't the word. The one thing that makes me fine with all of it is that I don't want to tell the other story because I'm trying to impress Randy Dofan. That guy knows me. I'm not going to impress him out of the blue. He knows how I train. He knows how I move. I can still surprise him. I don't mean in the ring. It's been a long time since I surprised him in the ring. I mean we're learning and growing together. So I'm becoming a new person. So that's what I mean. Those surprises can happen. But generally speaking, if anybody knows how I train, it's him. I'm just frustrated. So non-egoically, I'm just frustrated that my legs don't want to do 10,000 leg raises. I'd hate to think that I'm never going to be in better shape than I am now, even if I got lean or more muscular for a role. It's actually possible, though. Wow, this just got deep and sort of expansive for me because it is possible. There is a point where your best days of something are behind you. And I think, if we don't adapt who we are today, this year we'll say, being extra sore today from calf raises doesn't mean I'm crappy in the legs now. This year, I'm not that dynamic, energetic, angry young man of 15 years ago, so I've adapted so that my career still works, my interactions still work, the idea that I'm valued still works, because there's value to that, I think, for a young man to be busting at the seams and want to, you know, take big swings. And then there's value as we get a little older to refine that. Seeing angry, like really angry 40-year-olds who are getting super drunk and can't hold down normal relationships, it's a bit like, you know, I'd hope you're starting to sort a few of those things out by now. And when I say I'd hope it, I don't mean judgmentally. Having been through that anger and that avoidance, I genuinely would hope you're starting to let some of those go, you know? And again, obviously, I just golfed with Greg, who introduced that brilliant idea that at a certain age, you realize you're not going to be a professional athlete anymore. And maybe things can get more fun. I just hope my legs always work well enough to work three pedals, because goddamn, you know, if I got to tone down certain aspects of physical activity, you know, part of the reason I hate it, let me stop talking about this after this idea, because if I want to stay lean but not exercise as much as I exercise, then I have to eat well. And I like to eat not the worst food in the world, but maybe, because I just want to eat. I don't mean fast food, but subtracting fast food, I want to eat whatever I want when I want. Way more so than you might think, because I'm basically skinny. But like fucking chocolate cakes, cannot avoid them. Love them. It has to be the most conscious decision in the world not to eat them. I just went into a serious reverie. But I gotta cut those out for a little bit. Oh man, I'm actually sitting in standstill traffic right now along the QEW. Got to get to work to do some voice stuff. And I love Toronto, but man, would I not mind a farmhouse one day where once you leave to go on a bike ride, you're already bike riding. In Toronto, you have to bike an hour to get to the ride, unless you're doing urban loops, which are okay, but nothing beats country rollers for my money. Or escarpment type climbs, but again, you're really, you know, you're riding to get there, or you're, you know, you see all the guys in their Porsche Cayenne SUVs with their bikes racks, and you're like, why don't you just bike there? And it's like, oh yeah, because it's in 2 hours in bumper to bumper traffic up Keele to get up to the farmland. So yeah, I love Toronto, but there is a price to pay to live here, man. And leaving the city to play with a buddy and coming back when both directions of the drive should be under an hour, and it's not. Should, by the way, being a relative term. I heard once that should is a parent word. I think I've talked about that in the podcast. I was thinking about that, you know, I should be better at this. Maybe traffic should be. I don't know if it's a parent word, but I do know that should doesn't work very well in my life. Should goes back to that thing I was talking about for me this morning, for you guys 20 minutes ago, about victimization. I should. I'm either basically punishing myself by saying that I'm not doing things right, or traffic should, which means that I'm being punished because, like, not I'm not doing the punishing. In both cases, I lose. Anytime I'm flinging that should around, I'm kind of losing. I should. It's like, well, what do you mean you should? I should be skinnier. Why? I should eat less chocolate. Why? Now, if there's a reason, great. Eat less chocolate. But you know, and this is interesting for me, chocolate's not a bottom line behavior for me, which is probably why I eat so much of it. As you guys know, booze and drugs. So that's, you know, that just doesn't happen. Cheating on Emily, never going to happen. All bets are kind of off on other stuff. So if I gain 10 pounds, whatever. 10 pounds in the course of a lifetime to then be able to lose it again because I don't even smoke anymore. Like, if I don't smoke, gaining and losing 10 pounds is a joke. So if I happen to really want a piece of chocolate, And even if it's because I'm depressed, maybe, that's fine. It's not that big a deal, you know? It really isn't that big a deal. And I want to have discipline. But again, even with that 40-year stuff I'm talking about, the idea of, like, the rigidest of discipline is becoming a little less necessary for me to prove on a daily basis. And it goes back to my brilliant therapist in LA, who really helped me understand when I was living like a Spartan. I was skinny as fuck. I was eating barely, partly because of discipline and partly because I was broke. And that's when he said, "Are you tired of it yet?" I was like, "What?" He goes, "Living this way, you know, celibate, broke, just getting by." He's like, "It's great that you can, but do you have to?" And again, this goes to, I think I talked about this. I once had a full-on, like, filling done with no freezing. I just wanted to know. And part of this was, I wouldn't call it my martial arts training. It was a version in my head of, I want to know that I can do extreme things so that normal things cease to feel extreme. And it kind of works, you know? Now, as you know, I've talked about the opposite these days, which is instead of going to the perimeter all the time and thinking that once I've ticked perimeter boxes, I now own all the land within it internally, I actually found that not to work terribly well. For me, I just became, things didn't relate and there wasn't much of a foundation. So these days what I do is I just kind of actually make sure normal stuff has a proper inhabitation. And then what happens is my middle grows. But if you imagine sprinkling a circle of sand or dumping, let's say spring 10-foot diameter, a circle of sand. That's kind of what I used to do, is run around that perimeter and go, look, I did a big motorbike ride. Look, I did a filling with no stuff. Look, I, you know, got fucking nothing but A pluses on those tests. These were challenges to myself. So great, you've covered that, 10 feet diameter circle. What I'm trying to do these days is just start in the middle of who I am and much like just start dropping sand. Now you guys know, if you've been to a beach, you know the difference of what I'm talking about. By the time it gets out to 10 feet, the mass within that 10-foot diameter circle, you've essentially created a big pyramid. Now the pyramid, that it's that shape is irrelevant, but that at the center is where it's going to be highest and deepest. That's what I'm hoping for on this current version of the journey. And by the way, in 10 years, I might be on this podcast going, man, when I was 40, I really didn't get it. That's fine. I hope the paradigm shifts don't come too fast and furious. I mean, you know, I don't think we need to go through too many. And I really do. But again, it's what I believe today, so maybe I'm wrong. If you've never read Illusions, read Illusions and get back to me with a smile and a nod at the idea that everything in this book may be wrong. All this podcasting might just be utter bullshit. Your mileage may vary. But anyways, the idea that I wasn't living in truth, in love, self-love, love of others in a way, I didn't know how. You know, when I kind of hit upon that at age 32, and even though I don't know it at that point, I know of it, so I know to start looking for it. 8 years later, it starts to sink in a little deeper. I'm still in the first piece of that journey. You know, if mastery takes 20 years, I'm on year 8, we'll call it, of self-love, you know, and a version of self-realization. So we're still pretty early here. I mean, we're just 8 years in. If that seemed like it just clipped, my girl phoned me. She's off to a bachelorette this weekend. Anyways, this whole self-realization thing, maybe it's wrong. Maybe all of it's wrong. Why I don't think it's wrong is because I wake up feeling better than most days, physical crap notwithstanding. Anyways, I'm going to let you guys go. I've been distracted a few times, and I don't feel like just rambling in your ear. Half the fun for me of the podcast is that, you know, we kind of get fired up about specifics, and that it's not just BS ramble, which is it's one of the things I like about, you know, I was looking back at the list of podcasts, and sometimes it's 38 minutes, sometimes it's 46. You know, if we have to fill an hour, you're going to get some weak chat. So I don't want to do that, at least not at this stage. Once we're making it rain in the six, yo, then we're talking about it. Apparently, Toronto's called the six. Yep, I found that out yesterday. Did not know that. Did not know Drizzy had made this the six. Somebody was saying something about the six. I'm like, ah. And Em's like, don't you know what the six is? And as she's asking, the way she's asking makes it pretty obvious that to her, I want to know what the six is. I didn't know what the six. I'm like, no. And she's like, wow. And then she goes, when everybody's saying like, killing it in the six, rolling up in the six, didn't you wonder what that is? And I was like, ah, now I'm back in my wheelhouse, which is, oh, if I didn't know what something was, I'd look it up. I hate not knowing what stuff is. I've never even seen that. So apparently no one I know has been all on about the six because I would have looked it up. I would have started using it. I would have pretended I was cool by talking about the six. That said, now that I know what the six is, you're going to hear all about it. So I am rolling up in the six, yo. I'm driving beside Sunnyside fucking BMX park. This has been such a great shift. I mean, there's skateboard parks, there's BMX parks in the city, you know? BMXing was kind of okay, but man, skateboarding used to be like illegal and stuff, and it's like, come on. Let's get people doing healthy, awesome stuff like skateboarding and BMXing. And if skateboarders and BMXers are doing wrong things, you treat them like anybody doing wrong things. But don't brand a group of athletes and awesome people. That's just lazy. That's like, wait for it, speeding tickets. Oh, that's a wrap. I'm Sean Benson. This has been Chatting Between Takes.